Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanford. Governor Jesse Ventura released his budget proposal yesterday, stressing tax reform and relief and putting a limit on new spending. The bulk of the surplus predicted in November will be dedicated to tax cuts. You should see your income tax go down by half a percentage point. You should get a check in the mail this summer from a sales tax rebate. And if the governor gets his way, you would also see a property tax reduction in his overhaul of education funding. Now, the governor has also recommended a cut in the state sales tax, a cut that would be made up by increasing the number of services subject to the sales tax. Critics of the budget, however, bemoan what you won't see. Lots of investment in education and infrastructure at a time when they say we can actually afford it. Now, we'll be talking to one of those critics today, and we'll be talking to you. Joining us in the studio today is Dave Hoggy. He is an editorial writer for the Star Tribune. Hey, thanks for coming by this morning.
Happy to be here.
All right. Why don't you just give us your first general reaction of the governor's budget?
Well, Catherine, I think there's a lot to like in this budget.
Hey, wait a minute. I've got a critic scheduled here for this morning in the first hour.
I'll get to that.
What are you doing here?
I'll get to that. Okay. I'll get to that. No, there's nice property tax reform, reduces the state's reliance on the property tax. That's a good thing. It's fiscally prudent. He wants to make sure that he can still balance his budget if the economy slows down. There are a few nice long-term investments in health care and public transit and so on. But there's also this very, very large tax cut. It's probably over $2.5 billion. It uses up virtually all of the surplus that's available to the state for the next few years. And that doesn't leave very much money for investments that would be good for the future of Minnesota.
So you think the balance is off?
Yeah. You know, Senator Moe used that word yesterday, and I thought that was a good word. Let's look at the balance between tax relief and then new spending on things that the state needs.
Yeah, but if you're a citizen listening to this conversation right now, when you hear surplus, you want to hear tax cut come right after that. After all, surplus means that we have paid too much in taxes.
Well, you know, we hear this phrase a lot. It's their money, give it back. And I'm sympathetic to that. The surplus is their money. But you know what? That grade school down the street, that's theirs too. The park where you go camping on Labor Day, that's theirs too. The University of Minnesota, that's theirs too. The people of Minnesota own all of these things, and they need to strike a balance between money coming back in sort of, you know, personal or private consumption versus investment in public goods.
So what would you like to see done differently in this budget?
Well, I think that the governor, and, you know, it's tough. You write a budget and everybody is unhappy with it. He makes tough decisions. But I think that you could substantially increase the investment in the University of Minnesota. You could substantially increase spending for state universities and state colleges. You could take substantial steps toward long-term care, which is a ticking time bomb for the state. You could make some investments on early childhood education and school readiness. And you could still bring down the overall cost of government in this state, which we're conscious of. It's important. It's something that people ought to watch.
Well, in fact, you know, I was just, you know, looking over some of the numbers this morning. He has held increased spending. I mean, it isn't like he's not increased spending.
Right. And
I think that's important to remember. I mean, there's all of these newspaper epithets this morning. Jesse the miser. This is such a tight-fisted budget. And state spending will increase by something like 5%.
Yeah, it goes up about 5.4% over 2 years. But, you know, the inflation rate is going to go up at least 5.4% over the next 2 years. So you're about holding even in, you know, real terms, inflation-adjusted terms. And then that doesn't account for a growing population. That doesn't account for what might be growing enrollments in schools. It doesn't account for the fact that health care costs are going up, and health care costs are, geez, I don't know, something like a quarter of the state budget, a very large share. So there are some expensive items in that budget, and they are going to be squeezed.
What harm do you see coming from this budget?
I think that the University of Minnesota, which is struggling to keep its national reputation, is going to struggle harder. I think that the ability of state colleges and state universities to serve the population at a time when a college education is more important than ever, I think they're going to struggle harder. I worry that we're not going to prepare the state for, you know, the aging of the baby boom. Look, us baby boomers are going to be geezers in 30 years or so, and we're going to be very expensive when that time comes.
Well, in fact, John Brandel of the Humphrey Institute has said this is a defining moment only because the baby boomers, many of them now have children who are older. They have parents who haven't yet entered the long-term care phase. So now is the time when they can afford to give up the cash.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to really, really get scared, you can look at something called the dependency ratio, and that's, you know, the number of children and the number of old people compared to the number of us youngsters who are working and earning money. And that dependency ratio in Minnesota is rather low right now. It's going to start turning up in the next couple of decades, and that means that we need more money to finance all of those social needs.
But I just keep coming back to this idea of tax cuts versus investment. The governor campaigned on tax cuts. This is, in fact, the first budget he's had in which we can see what he's really made of. And he's been telling us for 2 years, this is what I'm made of.
Yeah, it's absolutely fair. He campaigned as a fiscal conservative. He campaigned as the guy who was going to give the money back. And he told us yesterday, I'm fulfilling a promise. And I give him credit for that. We think that the balance is off.
We're talking to David Hoggy. He's an editorial writer for the Star Tribune. And over the weekend, they were talking about the need for investment. Now, we would like to know how you see the balance in the governor's budget. Do you think this is the time to go ahead and get those tax cuts that we've been talking about for so long? Or do you think it's time to invest in the state? What do you think of the timing? What do you think of the balance? We'd like to know. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Now, I noticed in the papers also that University of Minnesota President Mark Udoff was surprised at the budget. Now, not much catches him by surprise. So what happened there?
Well, the university asked for something like $200 million in new money over the next two-year period. I think they probably didn't expect to get all of that money. Nobody expects to get everything they ask from the governor, any governor. But they ended up getting about a quarter of that. They ended up getting about $50 million instead of $200 million. And I think they were surprised by that. And the same thing, for that matter, with the state colleges and universities, the Minsky system. They also asked for about $200 million in new dollars. They also got about $50 million. And I think they were a little surprised that it came in as low as it did.
And what do you think is going to happen in the legislature? Well, because one thing that strikes me is that it seems that there is, at least at the Star Tribune, strong editorial support for the governor's ideas for tax reform, the way he wants to overhaul property taxes and education financing. Now, he has this rather complicated tax reform proposal. I believe that Governor Arne Carlson, you know, has referred to it almost as a house of cards, that, you know, you can't take one part away. All of that reform has to go through. I'm assuming that these tax cuts are part of that.
Well, there are so many moving parts in this budget that, Catherine, if you can keep track of them, then you're doing a better job than I am. But we do like the tax reform proposal, the tax reform piece of this budget. The governor wants to reduce Minnesota's reliance on the property tax. That's a good thing. And replace that by increased revenues from the sales tax. And personally, I like that, too. You know, you're moving toward a tax on consumption and away from a tax on income and property. I think philosophically that makes sense. But you can do that. That's separate.
Mm-hmm.
That's separate. You can do that without this very large cut in the income tax, without a lot of additional cuts in license tab fees and various other tax cuts that are in this budget. So you can do a lot in terms of tax reform, and we support a lot of those things on the editorial page, especially in the property tax, commercial, industrial, business property tax. We support those. You can do a lot of those, but still keep some money aside for the important investments that the state needs.
Now, what would happen if, say, the surplus was split between tax cuts and investment? Would that go some way toward the kind of investment that you would like to see?
Yeah, rough back-of-the-envelope calculation. You could split the surplus.
Should we get a cocktail napkin and just do the state?
Just okay, like Arthur,
yeah.
Laffer. Yeah,
yeah,
we'll,
yeah,
draw that curve. You could split it 50-50. You could make substantial new investments in higher ed, substantial investments in long-term care,
when
and so on.
Why haven't we made substantial investments in higher ed? I mean, I heard some discussion yesterday on public radio, in fact. Our political editor, Mike Mulcahy, was talking about how every governor seems to go through this. They give lots of money to education, and then they say, hey, I haven't, you're back here asking for more.
You know, that budget is so doggone complicated, but I like to look at it this way. The share of the Minnesota budget that goes to higher ed has been shrinking for 10 years. The share of our total state budget that goes to higher ed has been shrinking for 10 years. Now, it's been shrinking in other states too, but it's been shrinking faster in Minnesota than in most other states. This is at a time when higher education matters more in our economy than any other time before, and that's a bad set of priorities.
Well, in fact, in a recent editorial, you made the point that other states are investing when we have cut back.
Yeah. You look at California. They all, you know, many states have had budget surpluses. Minnesota is not unique these days. It's a time of fabulous prosperity around the country. California took more than $1 billion of their budget surplus and put it into scholarships for California kids to go to college based on merit and need. Illinois is spending well over $1 billion over the next several years in high-tech investments, including a new medical school for their state university, internet investments, and so on. Georgia is making investments. Around the country, other states are really being quite aggressive at the way they invest
in money. Now, you've also been here in mid-morning to talk about Minnesota's problem with smugness, but I'm going to go ahead and ask this, which is maybe these places are just trying to get up to where we've been for a long time.
Well, there's a lot to that. I mean, let's face it, Minnesota still leads the pack on a lot of measures. We have wonderful public schools. We have wonderful health care in this state. We have a wonderful quality of life. But I tell you what, other states are running fast to catch up, and I think we need to run a little harder, too.
Let's go to Michelle in Woodbury. Michelle, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Yeah, my concern is this really fastly growing sentiment toward anti-tax. They just want their money back. I don't want to pay taxes. And I would be very willing to work with your guests to write a great editorial about what our taxes do for us, because I think people have really lost sight of all that our taxes do. I mean, they don't realize, you know, if the price of bread went up and E. coli was everywhere and all these things that undermine some of our public health infrastructure, people would be going, what's going on? What's going on? They're like, you know, your tax dollars are doing a lot every day. We are the richest nation in the world. No matter what you say, we pay less for our food and our clothes and our gasoline than anyone else in the world. And that's because of the taxes we pay. And I think we've got to do a better job of reminding people that. And I think in the end, when they get their tax cut, it's not like getting that check from Jesse in August. I don't think people will really see it or really know it. The people who are against taxes will be against taxes no matter what until the time they need a government service and they're glad they may be paid in. But I do think as citizens, we have to be a little more aggressive and maybe editorial writers and saying, hey, you guys, this is what your money does for you, and we need to appreciate it and stop complaining.
Okay, Michelle, do you feel better?
I do!
Okay, good, 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 good.
Well, I think Michelle makes a very good point. I understand why people are suspicious of government and skeptical toward government, and they think they turn over their tax money and it's wasted. But, you know, look at the state of Minnesota. If you look at the spending priorities in this state spends its money on the right things. It spends its money very wisely. Where does our budget go? It goes into public grade schools and high schools, it goes into universities, it goes into parks and natural resources, it goes into a good, very large, very sprawling, but quite good highway system. The state has the right priorities. We spend money on the right thing, and so I'm comfortable letting them spend some of that money.
We're going to go to Susan in St. Paul. Susan, welcome to Mid-Morning.
I think permanent tax cuts are the only sensible answer to the surpluses we have. Putting a surplus in front of the legislature is worse than putting candy in front of a child. Neither can resist the temptation. I think that if we don't get the permanent income tax and permanent sales tax cuts and user fee reductions and property tax cuts, anything that will eliminate future surpluses. The woman who just spoke against tax cuts is really not aware of where our money is being wasted. We spend our money on lots of wrong things, and I can't believe that your speaker, your guest today, just mentioned highways. Highways, for God's sakes, when we're spending probably $1 billion on a 12-mile little trolley for light rail. So I don't understand how you can actually sit there and say that we spend all the money on the right things, because we don't. The surpluses that state government spending has multiplied many, many times faster than inflation, and our after-tax income for Minnesotans who work very hard for their money has barely kept pace with inflation.
Susan,
I think the trend must be stopped.
Susan, I'd love to know more areas where you think we're wasting.
Well, last year we spent, I think it was something like $75,000 on a study to study if manure stunk. And, you could ask a two-year-old and they could tell you that.
Are you by any chance talking about hog farming?
Right.
Okay. So, in other words, there was a study.
Well, I mean, that's only a drop in the bucket. I have looked over the budget from last year, and I could cross through probably 50% of the things that I thought were wrong things to spend money on. And I think the majority of Minnesotans are overburdened by taxes. If people had more money in their pockets, they could do far more with their families. We would have probably more of a coherent family structure because the mother wouldn't have to go out and work.
Okay, Susan, I'm going to thank you for your call. I want to remind the rest of you that if you have your own opinions about Governor Ventura's budget proposal, he's now being called Jesse the Miser. We'd like to know what you think. Do you support his call for tax cuts? Why or why not? Give us a call, 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Of course, there are also those who look at him now as a governor who keeps his promises. He campaigned on fiscal conservatism. That's what we got in this budget. We'd like to know what you think. 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. All right, Dave Hoggy from the Star Tribune. I'd like to get your reaction to our last caller.
Well, you know, Susan's right. We could all look at the state budget and find things that we think are dumb and that I could find some that I wouldn't want to spend my money on. But if you look at the overall budget, there has been a lot of belt tightening over the last 10 years or so. It started with Governor Arnie Carlson. He was a very fiscally prudent manager. They have tightened down a lot of things in the state budget. As for, you know, take-home pay, and we're all very sensitive to that, the share of taxes that Minnesotans pay to state and local government has, out of total income, has been going down since the mid-1990s. Not a lot, but it's been going down some, so that your take-home pay is a little higher today than it was 10 years ago.
Now, I know that we have been ranking high in the number of states who are doing tax cuts. And there's a lot of statistics available out there. But don't we remain a high tax state? Are we still in the top 10 or not? Do we know?
A million different ways of measuring it. Yeah. But, yeah, we're probably out of the top 10.
But we're still in the top 20.
We're still in the top 20, although there are a lot of different ways to look at this. If you look at one thing to remember, we have a very progressive tax system in Minnesota, which means
And let's remind folks what that means.
Yeah, that means that rich people pay more as a share of their income than poor people. As you go up the income ranks, you pay more. We have maybe the most progressive tax structure in the country. Certainly our income tax is that way. So that affluent people in this state pay a very large share of the tax burden. That also means that if you look at middle-income households, whether it's the property tax, the sales tax, the income tax, sort of the average middle-income family, our tax burden in Minnesota is not far off the national average. We're probably in the middle third somewhere. Believe it or not, astounding fact, but we're probably in the middle third for middle-income households.
We're going to go to Jim in Minneapolis. Jim, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a very interesting discussion, but I have a very big concern about the fact that I believe the governor is putting the cart a little bit in front of the horse, at least in one area. Minneapolis at the moment, the school district, is spending about $27 million out of its regular funding, what's supposed to be going for classroom teaching, on special education, because the state, as well as the federal government, though I believe the $27 million is on state-mandated requirements to provide education for kids with special needs, and yet the legislature hasn't funded the mandate. So that kind of a thing makes it all the more difficult, particularly these days where we're talking about educational accountability and increased testing and other things. I just think it's a good idea that the mandates that the state has put on local bodies of government and educational systems actually be funded.
Yeah, Jim, I think that's a great point. Now, I am not an expert on the public schools and education funding, but I believe they told us yesterday that they're mindful of this issue of special ed and mandates for the local school districts, and they're trying to put some extra money into that. They're mindful of that special ed burden that the local school districts bear.
Now, let's talk for a minute that a lot of this budget was predicated on a November surplus prediction, and everyone has been saying, because of the economic slowdown, that by next month we're going to know that that surplus is a lot less. So wasn't it actually prudent for the governor? I mean, it's one thing to cut back on spending. It's another thing to cut back on tax cuts. He's not promised anything that he can't deliver if the surplus goes south.
I like this about that budget. Commissioner Wheelock, Commissioner Smith, the governor himself, they're very mindful of the possibility of a slowing economy. They want that budget to be balanced in a couple of years, even if the economy slows down. But, you know, that's also an argument against large permanent tax cuts. Once you lower the tax rate, income tax rate permanently, if a year or two from now you find yourself in a revenue pinch, it's hard to undo that. It doesn't mean that you can't reduce taxes, but you have to be mindful of that economic slowdown on the tax side as well as on the spending side.
Let's go to Gary in Minneapolis. Gary, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay.
Good. See, I want to make sure I understand the movement of the property tax reform. Is that not an attempt to move the education burden off of property taxes?
That's right.
Okay, that's what I thought. I agree with that part of the governor's budget. The only problem, as far as the tax side goes, that I have an issue with is moving that burden to sales tax, which is a very regressive tax. I don't like the idea of expanding the sales tax.
You know, Gary raises a really good point here because there is the potential for sales tax to be regressive, and of course that means it falls harder on lower income people than on higher income people, just to get through some of the jargon. But again, I think the governor is mindful of this. He's exempted, you know, food and clothing and other necessities from the sales tax expansion. And that takes care of a big part of the regressivity problem. Also, it's kind of fun to think about this. You know, rich people spend more on services than poor people do. Poor people are not likely to hire somebody else to clean their house or to mow their lawn or do their taxes for them. And so in that respect, putting a sales tax on services can be, we don't know, but it can be a, you know, a progressive move. The other thing to bear in mind that they're trying to do, there is a big element of tax reform. They're trying to think strategically here. Services used to be about 40% of our total economy. Today, services are about 60% of our economy, and that means that if you don't put the sales tax on services, then you have a shrinking tax base going into the future.
We're talking to Dave Hoggy. He's an editorial writer for the Star Tribune, and we invited him in this morning to take a gander with us at Governor Ventura's budget. Now, some newspapers this morning are calling him Jesse the Miser. Others are applauding his conservative, fiscally conservative budget. We'd like to know if you give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Where do you see the balance in this budget? Do you like the ideas for tax reform? Do you wish that there was more investment in, say, education or transportation? The highways. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Investment versus tax cuts. So often this conversation comes down to that. We'd like to know what you think. It's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Greta Cunningham. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Thanks, Catherine, and good morning. The last two fugitives from a Texas prison break have surrendered at a Holiday Inn in Colorado Springs, Colorado this morning after being allowed to air their grievances in a phone interview. During the interview, they criticized the Texas prison system. The original seven escapees allegedly gunned down an Irving police officer during a Christmas Eve robbery. Sources say the white supremacist accused of killing a mail carrier and wounding other people in a 1999 Los Angeles shooting rampage has agreed to a life in prison term. The U.S. Attorney's Office says Buford Furrow has agreed to plead guilty to a 16-count indictment on federal hate crimes. President Bush is meeting this morning with the Democratic leaders of the House and Senate. He's outlining his education bill. Democrats agree on many of Bush's points, but the topic of school vouchers could be a deal breaker. The Senate is expected to confirm four more members of President Bush's cabinet today. Among those expected to be confirmed are Elaine Chao as Labor Secretary and Norma Mineta as Transportation Secretary. Senate Democratic leaders say a committee vote on John Ashcroft's nomination to be Attorney General, which was supposed to take place today, will be delayed until next week. In regional news, Governor Ventura will talk about his budget during a stop in Duluth today. Ventura released his $27 billion budget yesterday. He'll head to Austin, Worthington, and Golden Valley later in the week. Legislative committees begin discussing the governor's budget today. Several panels will look at Ventura's plan. Smokers can still light up in Little Falls restaurants. Voters in the central Minnesota city have rejected a plan to ban smoking in restaurants. The city council passed the ban in October, but when opponents put together a petition, the council agreed to a citywide vote. The forecast for Minnesota calls for sunshine this afternoon. High temperatures today ranging from 10 in the west to the teens in the east. At this hour, some light snow is reported in Rochester, a temperature of 16 degrees. Skies are cloudy in St. Cloud and 9 degrees. It's sunny in Duluth and 18 in the Twin Cities, sunshine and 14 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
For information about becoming a member of Minnesota Public Radio, call 1-800-227-2811. And thanks.
This week, a Prairie Home Companion comes to you live from the Fitzgerald Theater in the heart of the country in the heart of winter, with our good friend Butch Thompson on clarinet and piano, joined by a fine trumpet player up from New Orleans, Duke Heitker, the great 6 and 12-string guitar player Leo Kottke, the news from Lake Wobegon, Guy Noir Radio Private Eye, much more coming up this week.
Saturday afternoon at 5 and Sunday at noon on Minnesota Public Radio.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. I want to remind you that in the second half of Mid-Morning, just a few minutes after 10, we'll be talking about President Bush's education plan. Now, the Bush administration has dubbed this Education Week, so I guess it makes sense that the education plan came out. If it was adopted and nothing was changed, what kind of changes would you see in the education your child gets? You might be surprised. Of course, vouchers is one controversial part of this plan, but you'd be amazed at how much of this plan has some democratic overtones. We'll be talking about both the political and the policy ramifications of this plan a few minutes after 10 here on Mid-Morning. Meanwhile, we are continuing our conversation with Dave Hoggy. He's an editorial writer for the Star Tribune, talking to him about the budget proposal that Governor Ventura announced yesterday. We'd like to know what you think of this budget proposal. Do you think there's too much reliance on tax cuts? Would you like to see more investment? Or do you think that this is the direction we need to go? Now, there are those who are looking upon this budget as sort of the debut of the real policy that Governor Ventura wants to endorse. Where do you stand on it? We'd like to know. 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Jill in Minneapolis. Jill, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Mm-hmm.
I actually answered a survey this morning from my local representative that came in the mail, and my husband and I were talking over breakfast about it. And it's interesting. I think the caller who said that we don't realize what our taxes go to made a very good point, because it is, you know, we often get our property tax statement and we go, ouch, and I definitely do that. And I would like to see a decrease in income tax, or more specifically property tax. We don't have children, but we really do believe that it's important to support schools and our community. And we think it's important for businesses to do the same, because it all leads to a quality of life. And we do have an incredible quality of life in Minnesota. But that has to extend to everybody, whether you have children or not. I mean, that's still something you may decide to someday, and we may decide to.
So now, Jill, now I'm confused. So are you saying you want tax cuts or you don't want tax cuts?
Yes and no, because I don't think you can have one. I mean, you can't. I guess I feel that the people who want tax cuts are willing to give up things that may not directly affect them now, but they might someday,
mm-hmm.
or they do hurt people who really need them. I would like to see teachers to be able to get a salary. I come from a family of teachers, and it's really a shameful how low they're paid for the kind of work. We expect them to do so much. We expect them to almost raise our children, to teach our children, to teach them to take these tests. It's incredible. And I think, too, you know, another caller referred to the new light rail system that's going in as a trolley, which just appalls me to no end. I think that light rail is a wonderful thing. I've been in several cities across the world that have these amazing train systems that make it so easy for anybody, whether high income or low income, to get around their city easily and affordably and quickly. And even in Minnesota, where the weather is so incredibly bad, I think, you know, my only criticism of the light rail is I think they should have built something that went east to west across the city, to extending to the suburbs.
Okay.
I think people would have realized how much more valuable, but I think we need a balance.
Okay, thanks, Jill.
Well, you know, Catherine, I think a lot of people in Minnesota agree with Jill that you'd like to see a mix of tax relief and new spending on things that are important. We did a Minnesota poll from the Star Tribune a week or two ago, and it found exactly that, that the biggest share of people want to see the money split between two different things. And I would make the point that this economy is doing so well right now. We don't know what it'll do in the next 6 months or a year, but it's doing so well right now. Minnesota income is so high that we can afford to do both. I mean, we have the money to grant some tax relief, to make significant new investments in things that the state needs, and still balance the state budget.
House Minority Leader Tom Pugh from South St. Paul said tax cuts alone aren't the answer for what ails Minnesota. So my question to you is, what ails us?
Well, we think of ourselves as a state that does everything right, and over the years...
Well, that could be a problem right there.
And over the years, we have done almost... I mean, Garrison Keillor's right. Over the years, we have done most things right. But I think that when you start to look at some of the things that we aren't doing as well as we could do, a lot of people in Minnesota would be surprised. I mean, if you look at spending on higher education, we rank number 23 out of the 50 states. Number 23. We think of ourselves as the brain power state, and yet we're number 23 in spending on higher education. We rank number 25 in spending on public transit. Okay, we're still a largely rural state. Do we need subways here? Maybe not. But I tell you what, this has become a very big, prominent metropolitan area, and it needs public transit. We rank number 25.
I'm going to go back to the education statistic. Yeah. Is that just in dollar amounts, or is that in percentage of the budget? Do you know how they rank that?
That figure is based on per capita spending. Okay. You compare the 50 states per person spending on higher ed, on K-12, et cetera.
We're going to go to Anne in Minneapolis. Anne, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, Catherine. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I guess my question is why your guest seems to think a half a percentage point reduction in income tax is so large. I mean, that's hardly anything at all. I mean, if we were talking like maybe a 50% reduction, that sounds large to me, but half a percent is hardly anything. I mean, it's basically a non-factor.
So what do you think should happen then, Anne?
Well, I think maybe, especially if we're going to increase the sales tax to cover more things like services,
mm-hmm.
that we should have a greater reduction in the income tax.
Okay.
Either that or we need to, you know, lower the sales tax even more because I think it's too unfair.
All right. So, half a percent, is that, what does that mean?
Well, remember, it's a percentage point, so that if you're paying 8% now, it goes down to 7.5%. On your income tax. It seems like a small percentage point. It adds up. It's $1 billion a year by the year 2004 for the state. It's a lot of, and even in Minnesota, you know, pretty soon $1 billion is a lot of money.
We're going to go to Mike in St. Paul. Because, you know, before we do that, though, I mean, I think what Anne's saying, though, to an individual, that doesn't mean that much.
Yeah, it's worth looking at the numbers that the governor's office put out mm-hmm. yesterday, and I'm not going to quote all of them. But that small percentage point in reduction in your income taxes is several hundred dollars per year. And then the property tax reduction is several hundred dollars more. The increase in the sales tax would offset some of that, but by no means all of it. So for a typical family, this tax cut package is many hundreds of dollars per year.
Let's go to Mike in St. Paul. Mike, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. My concern is the shift from a deductible item on the tax return, which is real estate, which is really real estate taxes, which are only one of two really good items left, contributions in real estate taxes, medical miscellaneous, there's some there but not available to a lot of people. When shifting a deductible item to a non-deductible, which is sales tax, increases the federal income taxes. So more money would have to be paid to the federal government, and also it increases the state income taxes paid, even though the rate decreases somewhat. And then the ripple effect on that is the renter's credit is based on real estate taxes. Even though it's a fixed percent, that percent may need to be adjusted somewhere down the road. So my concern is we'd probably end up paying more in federal taxes, and more of the money would go to the federal government rather than going to the in savings.
Okay.
Well, Catherine, we're really getting into the swamp here.
I was just going to say, did you follow that? Because I've got the diagram
here.
Okay.
But I tell you what, there's nobody in the world who knows more about tax systems than our revenue commissioner, Matt Smith. He's a great guy, and he thinks that this is moving the overall revenue system in the right direction. So I'd encourage Mike to talk to the commissioner.
And I'm sure that, you know, there is a way to do that. But I was just going to say, I actually have heard that criticism before, that somehow this would transfer more money to the federal system.
That's true. I mean, one of the reasons that the Minnesota tax system, even though state taxes are high, a lot of it is deductible against federal. So in the overall tax burden, Minnesotans end up getting a little benefit there. I would guess that the shift is going to be rather tiny, rather small. The impact on your federal taxes is going to be rather small for the typical taxpayer.
Talk about how this budget is going to be a test of tripartisan government.
Wow. I don't know anything about politics, Catherine, so this is going to be hard. I know that...
Hey, you're an editorial writer. You can fake it.
Right? Yeah, right.
You know, last year, the governor looked a little bit like a Democrat. Mm-hmm. He wanted a progressive approach to tax rebates. He had some very nice investments in housing, social services, and health care. This year, he looks more like a Republican. And I think it is going to test how our sort of our tripartite government works out. Frankly, I'm a little worried. I don't know how they're going to achieve this three-way balancing act and come out with a budget by the end of the year.
Really?
Well, the divisions seem so sharp. You know, it seems to me the House of Representatives, which is now in Republican hands, is, you know, nearly ready to pass this budget. They like it very, very much. They like the emphasis on tax relief. I think the Senate Democrats are quite troubled by it. And I don't know how the three branches of government, the House and the Senate and then the governor's office, work out a compromise on this.
We're going to go to Pat in Minneapolis. Pat, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi. See, I had a quick comment about your guest saying earlier that we were out of the top 20 in highest tax states or highest tax people.
No, actually what he said was that we were out of the top 10, probably still in the top 20.
Okay. Because, I mean, based on every accounts I've read and seen, and I've seen quite a few, and the last one I saw was by the Taxpayers League, that we're definitely well within the top five based on our progressive tax rate. And it's almost silly to think that we're barely chipping away at how high a tax citizens are in this state based on the progressive tax rate. And I think it's also interesting to note what they consider wealthy in this state because of the progressive tax and poor, if you could comment on those things.
Yeah, and hang around because I'm as you can hear the papers, I'm looking for the Taxpayers League because I don't think they've said we're in the top five. But let me find it.
It might have been last year, but I'm pretty sure.
It might have been a couple years ago, I'm afraid. But let's let Dave Hoggy respond here, and I'll keep burrowing.
One of the big rankings that people watch is issued every year by the Tax Foundation. That's in Washington, D.C. It's a sort of a conservative think tank. And last spring when they put out their findings, they said that Minnesota had dropped to number 10 if you just look at the state and local tax burden. If you count the whole tax burden, including federal taxes, we had dropped out of their top 10. We were about number 13 or so. The second excellent ranking that's done is by the Minnesota Taxpayers Association. They do the most thorough, wonderful stuff I've seen. They have not updated their stuff because they wait for some really nice data from the Census Bureau. But it depends on what you look. If you look at the income tax, then we're probably still in the top 10. If you look at the sales tax, then we're somewhere in the 20s. If you look at the property tax for, again, typical residential homesteaded property, we're probably in the low 20s. We probably have a below-average property tax in Minnesota. When you add all of those together, we're probably somewhere between 10 and 20.
All right, I'm still looking for the Taxpayer League because I think what was interesting was I know they didn't have us in the top five. Well, we're going to keep continuing here. Sorry about that, Mike. Things are never at your fingertips when you want them. Let's go to Dorothy in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
This is a question about sales tax base. I guess I wouldn't be opposed to broadening the sales tax base if we included investments because the wealthy can afford to spend more of their money in investments. Why not tax it?
Well, you know,
as a sales tax on any type of, you know, banking or investment stocks, bonds.
Well, Dorothy, now just hang on here. You don't by any chance have a retirement account, do you?
Yes.
Okay, that's an investment.
Right? I would be willing to have that tax.
So you consider yourself, I mean, I just love how we always talk about the wealthy, but then we think that, you know, if we have a 401k, then we can't be wealthy.
Oh, no, I would be in favor. I would be happy to pay tax on that.
Really?
Yes, because if you can afford to have a retirement account, you should, and you're not going to be paying as much tax as an income or a property tax, yeah, why not? And I'm very much for education. I think if the small increase they're giving the schools and the university go into effect, I think I would consider leaving Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you, Dorothy.
Well, I think some of those financial services may well come under the scope of the sales tax under the governor's proposal. I haven't looked at every single detail, but it will be broadened to cover a lot of things that, affluent Minnesotans now purchase. But at the same time, when we talk about wealthy people, and, our editorial page believes in a progressive tax system, believes that those who are better off can pay more. But having said that, you look at wealthy people, they are heavily taxed in the state of Minnesota. We have a very progressive income tax, and they pay a big share of the taxes.
Let's go to Mike in Brainerd. Mike, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't understand the people that are complaining about taxes. My understanding is that there's more tax revenues because people have more money, they pay more income tax, they have more money, they buy more things, and pay more sales tax. I don't, I really dislike Jesse's budget proposals. I don't think the state's meeting its obligations, and I don't think we should have a refund.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Sure.
Well, I think, everybody's going to have a different opinion about the refund and so on, but Mike makes a very good point. The reason that we have large surpluses in the state right now is not because some previous governor or some previous legislature raised tax rates. There was an increase in the sales tax several years ago. But the main reason is that there's been this surge in the economy. There's a surge in incomes. People are earning more. There's a surge in capital gains. The stock market has gone crazy, and people are cashing in those gains. There's been a surge in spending. We have a sales tax. When people spend more, it brings more revenue in. And at the same time, there has been significant budget restraint in St. Paul over the last 7, 8, 9 years, so that the growth of spending has slowed down a little bit at a time when our ability to create and produce wealth and spend it has increased hugely.
We're talking to Dave Hagge. He's an editorial writer for the Star Tribune. We asked him to come in today to give us his views on the governor's budget proposal that was announced yesterday. We'd like to hear your views as well. Do you want a tax cut, or do you want more investment or more spending, depending on how you look at that, in the state of Minnesota? It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Now, it looks like Daryl McKigney has joined us. He called in. He's the president of the Taxpayers League of Minnesota. This is great, Daryl. I don't have to look anything up now. Whoops. There we go. There you go, Daryl. Now you're on the air.
Good morning. I heard you were asking about where Minnesota ranks in tax.
Well, according to the different organizations, because we know that it all depends on your vantage point.
Well, the last numbers that came out from the U.S. Census Bureau, which came out, I believe it was in October of last year, had Minnesota ranked fourth highest overall. And the reason why it can be a little misleading for people to hear different rankings is that it's not where you rank in any particular tax. What makes Minnesota unique is that most states only have one or two kinds of taxes. They might have an income tax or they might have a sales tax, but they probably don't have both. Where Minnesota may rank within the top 10 on any particular tax, what makes us different is we collect every kind of tax at a high rate. And
now,
so
when
you add everything up, we're the fourth highest.
Now, Daryl, but I also have quotes from Dave Strom, your legislative leader, responding to statistics that show that we've moved out of the top 10. So I guess my point is that it really depends on how you know.
Well, we move out of the top 10 in any particular tax, but when you add up the entire burden, according to the Census Bureau, we are the fourth overall.
I don't think that's quite right. The census data, and I mean, Daryl's right, the census numbers are probably the most comprehensive, the most thorough. That's what all the experts look at. The problem is that they're 4 years old. I believe, and Daryl, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the last census rankings that were released were for 1997.
Well, I think the ones that I saw that were released last year were actually 98 or 99 numbers.
But we still have had tax cuts since then, because we're talking about year 2001 now.
The last comprehensive census survey of state and local revenues is from 1997, and we were still high then. That was before big tax cuts in 97, again in 98, again in 99, again in 2000. So the most recent ranking, and this is national, the Tax Foundation, had us number 10 or lower.
All right. Daryl, I want to thank you for calling. Daryl McKigney, president of the Taxpayers League of Minnesota. We're going to go to Judy in Minneapolis. Judy, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to thank David Hauge for sparking this dialogue. I guess my question is there really a surplus at all if the state leaders are not strategically investing in those things that position us to be a healthy and vital economy in the future? There have been several people outside and inside Minnesota who have commented the same way David has, that we are so concerned about taxes that we're not paying attention to our future. I'm on the Minneapolis School Board, and my passion, of course, is education.
Is this Judy Farmer by any chance?
Yes, it is.
All right. We have to out you here, Judy. If you're going to identify yourself as a public official, this is good.
That's fine. But I think that people from Silicon Valley have come and said, you're worrying too much about taxes. We did the same thing, and now we're paying for it. And what they are investing in now is transportation, education, and affordable housing. Because if Minnesota is going to be competitive as a state and continue to be thought of as a place where people want to move to, and we attract high-skilled high-tech workers, then do we maybe need to be in the top rankings as far as taxes are concerned? Because we're an icebox. We don't want to be a cold Omaha. And in education, it seems to me if 81% of the Minnesota school districts have approved referenda, which says we're willing to raise our own taxes for schools, that's a pretty loud message that education is something people in this state are willing to invest in, and yet the state isn't funding mandates. They froze the education general ed formula for several years in the early 90s. School districts all over the state are going to be cutting their budgets, and people are not going to understand why. So my question is, are we strategically investing, or are we worrying just far too much about our tax ranking nationally? I'd rather have us worry about how do we rank nationally and some of those indicators that would indicate that we are wisely investing to position ourselves for the future.
Now, Judy, I have a quick question for you, mm-hmm. which is, as a member of a school board, how do you look at this budget?
I can tell you that around our school district headquarters yesterday, where the school board was having a discussion on our budget, it was a very grim day.
Really?
Oh, really? We are looking at, best-case scenario, $15 million that we have to cut. Worst-case scenario, maybe up to 30.
What about this plan for property tax reform?
Well, I think there's no doubt that property tax needs to be reformed, but we're a little concerned that putting all of the general ed formula off the property tax rolls puts education on a very unstable footing. The most volatile taxes are sales and income. They reflect the economy very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Property tax does not. And if you're thinking about how do you plan for a school year or, you know, 2 or 3 years out, you don't want the possibility of massive layoffs of teachers 1 year because the economy goes in the tank. And the next year, you know, things perk up, and so then you've got massive hires. So stability is something that school districts look for in their funding source.
Okay. Dave Hauge.
I think Judy made a great point. Now, I think as we, and on the editorial page of the last year, we've been trying to compare Minnesota to other states. How do we compare? How do we rank? I think you do have to worry about the tax burden. You have to be an attractive place to do business. You have to be a place where people want to live. However, you also have to look at the investment side. We've been saying, you know, we're a little like Sweden, and I don't mean because we're full of people who eat lutefisk. We're a remote place. We're a small place without very many people. We're a cold place. Lawrence Perlman, the corporate executive who headed a task force, said it well. There aren't very many of us, and we've got to be good. We've got to have the right infrastructure, the right public investments to prosper and to do well.
Let's go to Anna in Minneapolis. Anna, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, I'm a student at the University of Minnesota, and because of these tax breaks, tuition might be raised again for the second year in a row. Last year it was raised over 5%, and as you all, as many people out there remember, when you're in college, every little bit counts. This, as Udolf said last night, it's the third worst budget in a non-recession year since 1945, and it is a land, the University of Minnesota is a land-grant university, which means that the state is supposed to fund many of our programs. And we do important programs like medical technology. Many people enjoy our sports and things like that, but if they're not willing to fund things, our university will go downhill and the students will end up paying the price because of many of these tax cuts.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I think Anna makes a good point. We'd all like to see the university be a place where, you know, when our kids grow up and go to college, they want to stay in Minnesota because the university is the best at chemical engineering or romance languages. When bright kids from other parts of the country are looking to go to college, that they want to go to the University of Minnesota so that bright young people are moving to this state. I think that's a very important investment for the state.
Let's go to Sue in Minnetonka. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you. My name is Sue. I'm a 55-year-old single school bus driver, a member of the working poor category, and I want to say thank you to Governor Ventura, and please keep up the good work in reducing these crushing tax burdens on the working poor in this state, especially property taxes. Property taxes are so high that they're a large part of what make housing unaffordable for the working poor, both rental housing and moderate-level owner-occupied housing. The property tax portion of a mortgage payment in many cases has gone up over 50% of the payment for those of us who already are desperately trying to stay in homes that we already own and have paid for. The valuations are rising so steeply, property taxes are going through the roof, and it's becoming impossible for us to stay in our homes and to afford the necessities of life like food and heating fuel and medical and dental care because of these crushing tax burdens. So a few hundred dollars in tax relief has been much appreciated by me and a lot of the working poor, working people that I know, and we want Governor Ventura to keep up the good work.
Okay.
Well, yeah, the governor is getting beaten up for tax cuts that might be tilted toward higher-income taxpayers, but I do think it's worth saying that he's done some very nice work in the last couple of years at relieving that tax burden on the working poor, and then there's more money this year for the working family tax credit, and if there are reductions in the property tax, that ought to help out working families too.
Very quickly, Dave Hoggy, what do you think is going to happen with this budget?
Boy, you know, I was over at a Senate committee hearing yesterday where Commissioner Wheelock was defending this, and there were a lot of, you know, hostile questions. I think it's going to be a very long, complicated fight between now and April or May.
Okay. Dave Hoggy, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Dave Hoggy is an editorial writer for the Star Tribune. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning.
Mark your calendar for the 7th annual Twin Cities Food and Wine Experience, coming to the Minneapolis Convention Center February 2nd through the 4th. Stop by.